Welcome to the Podcast for Empathy and Imagination, Episode 7. This is the show where we bring empathy and imagination to bear on all the problems and topics that we can think of. My name is Aubrey.
My name is Drew Clark.
And thanks for joining us. Episode 7 is somewhat of a milestone.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
7's important. So, last week we had a special guest, Rebecca Ainsworth. It was a great show.
Mm-hmm.
And our question was, when someone is approaching you aggressively and trying to make you wrong, how do you avoid punching them in the face? I think that was how Rebecca originally phrased it, so we're going to go with that. Mm. And, yeah, here we are. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. Drew, how was your week?
Well, you know, it's there's been some challenges. Mm. I know I've been talking a lot about gradients, about my quest to open a conscious craft beer bar, and this Friday we had a serious blockade come up. We had a meeting scheduled with the building owner, who he and I share the same first name.
Mm-hmm.
And when we worked at Cafe Gratitude, he also met me there, and we talked a little about what we were going to do. And even then, months ago, he said he would have to do some research on the industry, the craft beer industry.
That he would have to do research?
He said he would, before he would allow us to come in there and do that in his building that he owns. And I was like, that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
How did that original meeting go? Was that
we were on the roof scooping leaves off of it, and he was like, oh, I hear you're talking about trying to take this place over. And I'm like, yes, that's how it came up.
Okay.
So I've come, as our listeners know, I've come a long ways. It's been several months now working on stuff. It's been about $1,000 on just fees for paperwork and stuff to get it together. And we were supposed to have our meeting Friday. But he postponed the meeting because he said he wanted to look over the paperwork that he got through the real estate company.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got to the meeting, which he delayed for about half a week, he had not read any of the paperwork. And when we brought it to show him, he wasn't interested in looking at it. He wasn't interested in much, actually.
Hmm.
I gave myself the experience that he really came to the meeting with no intention of actually creating a solution with us. I believe he came to the meeting to stake his claim for something else.
He had already decided before the meeting.
I believe so.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't agree to a lease extension. Basically, like, we say, hey, we want to come in on this lease, but then have an option for a 5-year extension at the end of that term, which is pretty standard business practice. Any investor is not going to invest if there's only a couple years left, because it takes more to earn your money back than a couple years, and what if something happens? So there's, like, all kinds of dangers if you don't actually, if you don't have a longer lease option.
Uh-huh.
So he was cold. Right on our very first question of, like, can we get 1 5-year extension? He was a cold no. And we kind of went around and we talked about, like, you know, the community and the signatures and emails that we got, all from people supporting the project that I was going to do. Current customers of Cafe Gratitude were like, yeah, let me know. This is going to be great.
Yeah.
Brought that up. We talked about the industry and he was just like, nope.
Hmm.
No.
Hmm. Bummer.
So my partner and I were looking at each other going, this is a no. And so we're in that meeting and it's just a total no.
Yeah.
So Gradient is on a serious pause. And there's like this little silvery whimper of a maybe that we could finagle some kind of funky business to get ourselves in that same building.
Mm.
Like, if the previous owners of Cafe Gratitude, were to, instead of sell us their lease, sublease to us.
Hmm.
If that could happen, then we could do it. But that seems slim at this point. And
are you tied to that location?
No.
Okay.
So it's weird. Partially, yes, no. A lot of the time and energy we've spent has been based on that location.
Yeah.
But the business plan, the financials, and our money, of course, can move to another location. Mm. We just have to adjust it for that location.
Right.
So there'd be some more work to do, but there we did. We already, after that rough meeting on the way back, we were both were like, yeah, that doesn't look good. There's no, it doesn't look possible. And so we looked at two other buildings, actually, on the way home.
In Berkeley?
One in Albany and the other in El Cerrito.
Okay. This is California. We're in California here.
California.
Podcast for Empathy and Imagination takes place in the Republic of California.
Yes, it does.
Thanks to our international listeners.
Thank you all, folks.
Thanks to our listeners in general. Wow, that's a bummer, man. But yeah. I'm glad that it's on pause. I'm glad the pause button has been hit and not the stop button.
Thanks.
I wish the play button.
Oh, man, we'd be having so much fun, you and me, in that building if we were the play button was on. So we're essentially kind of rethinking and keeping an open mind. We have all this momentum and all these tools and skills.
Yeah.
And I'd like to be able to contribute to a community in some way with these tools.
Where's this location with all the outdoor space? Is that in Albany?
Yeah, it's, you know Sam's Log Cabin, you know that breakfast lunch joint?
I do.
Great. Oh, man.
Place is great.
I love that place. It's so delicious.
Fish sandwich is awesome.
Two doors over.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Two doors south?
Huh.
Basically, their patio's as big as their building. So there'd be a whole bunch of outdoor whatnots.
Yeah.
Couple downsides.
Public space.
Public space.
It's important.
Well, that's a good side. That's an upside.
Yeah. Go listen to episode 5 when we mentioned public space.
Yeah. Episode 5.
I think episode 5.
So I'm envisioning there'd be a place for dogs. Smoking probably still couldn't. Cigarettes probably still couldn't happen. I bet you could.
Yeah.
If those were medically inclined, one could probably sneak a toke.
Marijuana cigarette.
But it is across the street from the police station. So there's like.
Yeah.
Something. I don't know. So anyway, that's basically the news with Gradient. Yeah.
Okay.
Are there any other questions there, you think?
Maybe our listeners have some questions. Go to empathyandimagination.com and comment on this episode.
Yeah, if you bring in your comments or questions, we'll bring them up
and
answer them.
Well, I hope it works out. I mean, I think that you have enough, you have momentum, like you said. You've gained knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You've learned, I guess whatever happens, you now have more experience and knowledge.
True. Whatever happens now, I do know a lot more about this process.
And rejection is important, and no is important. There is no failure, right? There's only learning. Failure is a opportunity to learn. Quote-unquote failure.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Well, how about your week, Aubrey? Can you tell me a little bit about how you're doing, what your week's been up to, how you been?
Doing good. Been good. Next question. No. my week's been good. I've been kind of sending out resumes, looking for some jobby jobs. And I built a hot tub. One of my kind of gigs that I do occasionally is build hot tubs with a friend of mine who has a business building hot tubs. So I did that Thursday and Friday. That was really cool. I'm really sore. Did a lot of gopher work. You know, go for this, go for that.
Huh. And heavy lifting, stairways.
Just a lot of it's a hill and then a stairway, and then a stairway, and then another deck, and then up into the yard. And I was thinking about it. You know, we had to dismantle a tub. First, it was a tub that's in a deck, recessed in the deck. So we had to tear that sucker out and haul it off and then haul the other one in.
You build on site?
Yeah. And so
you couldn't repair the old tub?
No. The customer thought they wanted the old benches, but they're really slimy and gnarly, so they decided to get a new bench. Anyway, I thought about it, and I think I probably made like 50 or 60 back and forth trips.
Oof.
And over 2 days, and it's a workout. It's really cool, though, because I learn a lot. like the plumbing and the electrical stuff, I still don't fully understand, but putting the tub together, I feel like I... So the Zeitgeist movement, resource-based economy.
Yeah.
What's been your experience? How have you tried to instantiate some of the principles of the Zeitgeist movement in your own life?
Well, I really try to think about abundance and access abundance and resources and needs in a way that's much more about how to get things met instead of what strategies. But that's also, you know, NVC.
Yeah.
But I would say that I've advocated and done a lot of like street stuff and farmers markets, and I did we had screenings for Zeitgeist Moving Forward, and I was a question answerer.
Zeitgeist Moving Forward, what is that?
That's the third documentary in the Zeitgeist series that is, I think, mostly closely related to the movement itself. It and Zeitgeist Addendum.
Okay, so there are three movies. What are the first two?
Well, the first one is just called Zeitgeist, and if I'm correct, I believe is the most viewed internet documentary in history.
In the history of the internet.
In the history of the internet.
Yeah. Just called Zeitgeist.
It's called Zeitgeist.
And it's on, let's say, YouTube.
Let's say it's on YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That it's was also on Netflix.
That was the... Oh, really?
Huh. I put it on there like last year.
Hmm. That was the first movie. What was the second movie?
Zeitgeist Addendum. And that's a movie... Well, Zeitgeist 1 was... It ended pretty dark. I mean, it ended with... Man, this is how we're screwed. Here's a short list on maybe what you can do. Yeah. Get a small car was one of the things in the list. It really... So it wasn't, you know...
It wasn't super inspiring or empowering. It was just kind of...
It was...
Laying out a certain viewpoint.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, Zeitgeist Addendum way got more into the solutionary orientation. That's
like the
much
practical,
more
the, yeah, practical that, applications. How can one do this?
Right. Especially with the Venus Project in Zeitgeist Addendum.
So they were, the Venus Project and the Zeitgeist founder, Peter Joseph, were in cahoots at that point?
They were in cahoots Addendum? For Addendum. It was like a co-operation.
Hmm. And then they had a falling out.
Later they had a falling out.
Which you talked about. Mm. And then there was a third movie.
Yeah. And the third movie was when I got affiliated with the movement in a bigger way, right before it came out. Actually, right after my accident on the airplane.
Your accident on the airplane. I don't think our listeners, our international listeners included, know about this.
Well, I was a flight attendant for 9 years.
What was your accident on the airplane?
I was injured in turbulence. I was working in the back of the aircraft, and turbulence occurred, and I got banged around real good.
And your shoulder?
My shoulder was the main deal. Yeah, that thing was pretty roughed up.
Is it still?
No, I feel it's completely healed. Although, when I'm very old, it'll probably hurt.
There'll be some resurfacing of that old injury. When you're very old?
Yes.
Do you have any injuries now that are still because of that? Any chronic kind of thing?
No, I think the worst part of that was basically the shoulder, and I essentially have everything back on my shoulder.
So after that accident, working in the back of the plane with turbulence, you had an epiphany or what?
Well, I think a few things happened. But one of the things that I did was I had already scheduled actually to go to my first Zeitgeist meetup. That was in the Deep East Bay, the Richmond Hangar.
Mm.
And it was a big group of people. It was like 50 people. It was really cool. We all talked about a resource-based economy and what to do.
Attachment, which disperses your urine stream into a fine mist. Something I know a lot of people have been kind of clamoring for. You know, I hear people on the street just kind of passing by, hear people talking about this stuff. And, you know, wouldn't it be great if there was this product? And guess what? Now there is. And we'll probably have a full ad to give to you guys next episode.
A little bit of photography probably, too.
Yeah. So thanks again, Final Corp.
Thanks, Final Corp.
So I have a topic.
Okay, let's get into your topic. Aubrey.
I have a topic here. You might have heard barking. That was a... joined by our lovely companions, canine companions, Inferno and Loki.
And they keep us safe and snuggled.
Okay, so my topic is bicycles.
Mm, I love that topic.
You ever heard of these? So a bicycle, often called a bike or cycle, human-powered, pedal-driven, single-track vehicle, having two wheels attached to a frame, one behind the other. Now, a bicycle rider, I didn't know this, a bicycle rider is called a cyclist.
Huh.
Or bicyclist. Now, the first chain-driven bike was developed in 1885.
Holy shit.
Right?
Did you know that some of the first gear shifting was inside the hub of the rear wheel? That was the first gear shifting. Later on, we moved it outside the bike.
It was like enclosed?
It was enclosed.
Huh.
I've seen old guys at bicycle shops I go to, which there are a number in the East Bay.
Old guys or bicycle shops?
Both. And they have this, I have this thing that's 50 years old. I re-greased it once in the 80s, and now it's still good. Like, internal hub shifting apparently is the OG model. I don't know if you know about that.
I didn't know about that.
So bicycles as a topic, I'm just giddy because
cool.
I have been as you said, a cyclist or bicyclist for as long as I have really any memories of being a human. It's my first, quote, toys as a child were things I could ride on with wheels. I remember, and my mom will attest to this, maybe we'll interview her over the phone sometime. That'd be a good time.
Yeah.
Ask her about how I used to burn bikes down. Not like wear the tires out and give up, but like rub the metal down on all the working components until they had to be replaced.
Huh. So the bike, the shape and configuration of a bike has really changed very little. And in my opinion, it's almost the ideal machine, right? There's such a small loss of energy. There's very little excess energy and movement. Everything is utilized. Your whole body is engaged. Your legs are pumping.
Your
arms are pulling and steering, mm-hmm. Eyes, ears. It's kind of a wondrous thing. You know, when an invention changes very little, you know you're on something. And I mean, it's kind of revolutionized society here. I know in other parts of the world, Amsterdam, I think, is huge into cycling.
Yes, I've been to Amsterdam, actually.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I ran into one of the most amazing things when you get off the main station in Amsterdam, because we took a train there because we flew to Germany with friends. Actually, that's some of the stuff I was deleting was some of my, or looking at was my Amsterdam footage. So there was like this mega plex compound for bike parking. It was like a garage for parking, but like 2.5 million bikes.
People lock their bikes up there?
People lock their bikes up there, but they're stolen so much. There's kind of a fluid market anyway. It's like
how it goes is
there, bikes are cheap. You can buy a cheap, probably stolen bike for pretty cheap and use it for as long as you can keep it locked up. And then it gets stolen and then you buy another one. But sometimes it's really blurry. And in Amsterdam specifically, there's very narrow bikes everywhere. 24/7, all the place, everywhere, going well. People are riding them, and they're mostly cruisers, not a lot of road bikes, mountain bikes, just cruisers.
Touring bikes.
Touring cruisers, basically.
Yeah. Comfort.
And they're everywhere. The town loves it. The people love it. It's all flat in Amsterdam. It makes a lot of sense. It's just a great idea.
The cars love it.
Well, the reason cars will just drive you over. It doesn't matter.
But for every bicycle, that's one less car.
Having a bicycle being one less car is a good technique to consider one's input, because not only are you saving and healing your own body when moving around, but you're not burning petrol fuels to move you.
It's true. Now, they say there is a risk of a higher risk of prostate cancer for people who bike a lot.
You ever heard of saw palmetto?
However, I just ride my bike standing up all the time. I take the seat off. No. Yeah, there's risks. There's risk that, you know, there's a cost benefit for everything. bikes are really cool. I mean, I remember, I think my first bike, you know, it was like a Huffy or something. Yeah, like a Huffy or something. I don't actually remember all the circumstances, but I had a paper route or paper route, whichever you prefer. And, you know, a little bag on the front with all the newspapers in it. And
did you throw them like in the movies?
No, I would walk up and put it on the stoop. But I remember I had like a black and yellow, like the bike was black, but the pads, like the crossbar pad and the handlebar crossbar.
Oh, pad. You had pads.
Yeah, this was, you know, I was what, 10 something, 12. It was black and yellow, my bike. And I just thought that was the coolest fucking thing ever. I always wanted a black and yellow bike.
Like Hornet status?
Yeah, because I played Legos a lot, and we had characters, me and my brother, we had characters. So like our kind of alter egos in Legos. And my guy, quote unquote, my guy was, his name was Ancient Trickster, and he was black and yellow.
Oh, cool.
So I just thought that was really cool. So I had a black and yellow bike, and I remember bees and hornets. I remember one day, just all these bees and hornets were around my bike, and I was like, is it because it's black and yellow? Like, what's going on here? And so that was like kind of a shitty bike, whatever.
Okay, can I ask you a question about that bike?
Yeah.
So that was your very first bike, was black and yellow? You're about 10 or 12?
Yeah, I don't know if my very first, but it was like it was a milestone. Yeah.
Do you remember any of the feelings you had, like when you first had access to that bike and you were able to ride it around, you had a little bit of that freedom? Do you remember any of the feelings you experienced?
I felt like the coolest guy. Coolest kid.
You felt super cool?
I had a bike that had the colors that I liked. Yeah, I just felt cool. It was great. Excited. Free. You know?
How far did you go?
Autonomous.
On that bike? Furthest from home.
I didn't stray very far. Only a few miles.
Yeah. Do you know about how long you used it for before you either sold it or gave it away?
Yeah. I don't know, 3 or 4 years.
That's cool.
When I was like 17, I remember my first girlfriend, first like real relationship, 17. And I had this like just crappy little 10-speed road bike.
What was her name?
Her name was Christine. And she lived town over. And that was like my first experience with riding long distances and uphills and using the gears to navigate and negotiate hills and so forth. And I just recently I looked up my route, and I remember the route going from Hull, Massachusetts to Cohasset, Massachusetts, down Roller Coaster Road, which was...
That's a good name.
Yeah, and you can imagine what kind of road that was. But I looked it up, it was something like 9 miles or something like that each way.
How much elevation did you notice?
And not that much, 800 feet maybe. And I didn't have an odometer. I didn't wear a helmet. I just had my Sony Walkman.
But you were a cool guy, man. I would have thought you were super cool if I saw that. You had a girlfriend and a Walkman and a bike?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Super, super nerd. But I didn't... I don't know. That seems like a long distance, 18 miles, right, in a day, because I would ride there and then at night I'd ride back. But at that time, age, whatever, it wasn't even an issue because I was in love, right?
Love.
It was just like, I could just do it and it was no problem. Now, of course, it's no problem because I bike all the time, but I don't know. It was like a singular experience.
Was it like your seminal event of feeling like having a tremendously more than walking amount of freedom?
Yes. And that's when I first did a rough calculation of the kind of difference between walking, cycling, and driving. Time differences. You know, the other thing about cycling that's cool, bicycles, is that you have a consistent commute time.
Always consistent.
Provided you don't have a flat or whatever on the way, but traffic is such a variable, right? when am I going to get there? Is there going to be traffic? In a bike, you don't consider that. There's no traffic alert for bikes.
If anything, your commute goes down slightly over time because you get in slightly better shape. And so the hill you was normally in first gear, now you're in your third gear going up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I remember the first time I rode uphill to Cafe Gratitude to come. I was like testing to see how long it would take me to make it before I had my interview because I'm like thorough like that. And I like almost had to get off and walk. I like was in my mind. I was like, just get off and walk.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, I charged through just barely and I was completely drenched. And I was like, that's like the hardest hill I've ever done. But then fast forward just like a month later and I'm like zooming up at it 8 miles an hour. I think bicycles are one of the great inventions of our time of paved roads.
It's one of the greatest inventions. Full stop.
Beam. Yeah.
Period.
All stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, because it's in terms of, you know, simple machines and so forth.
Well, a lot of
it really is almost an ideal machine.
A lot of our use of this machine is based on the concrete road system, though. I was thinking about that. Like, I have this tremendous love for bicycles. And without if there were never any roads made or, say, they stopped being maintained for some reason, it would diminish incredibly my ability to use my cyclocross on the road.
Yeah. There's another interesting point there is that, let's say you don't have a car, you just have a bike, you still pay taxes, which then parts of the taxes go towards the maintenance and upkeep of the freeways, but bicyclists can't use the freeway.
It's illegal.
It's a little bit of a problem, a little bit of a disparity there. So I maybe agree. If you don't have a car and you just have a bike, you pay less taxes. Wouldn't that be something?
It's interesting, too, because on a bicycle, you can receive a DUI, driving under the influence of alcohol.
That's right.
Things. But, like, you don't have a bicycle license. So, like, you can keep riding your bike. You just can't drive a car. So, say you didn't have a car and you were mega drunk all the time. They just keep giving you tickets and they can never take away your bicycle license.
So, if you get,
it doesn't exist.
If you get a DUI on a bike, you can get your vehicle license revoked?
Same day.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
Well, they say that your foolishness on a bike could cause some accident. Not that you could hurt somebody, but that you could cause someone to hurt someone else or something.
Yeah, but it's still there's a displacement.
Very.
There.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's lots of displacements. So, yeah, bicycle DUI means you can't drive a car. You keep riding a bike.
That's absurd. That is absurd.
You know, when I was riding my bicycle home from work a few months ago when we worked together at Cafe Gratitude, I made like kind of an early turn, which ended up so that I was sort of going down San Pablo Avenue a little bit the wrong way for about 100 feet. Then I got up on the sidewalk and made a left turn and got on the bike lane.
San Pablo's kind of a busy main street here.
Yeah, it kind of cuts through all the towns and it's in a straight line pretty much.
Yeah.
So the cop saw me, and he was very upset when he finally did catch up to me on my bicycle, riding home from work very late at night. Hadn't had my medicine, cannabis, or something I enjoy also, craft beer. Hadn't had any.
Totally sober.
100%.
Just doing some late at night.
Very late at night. Just kind of swooping. There was a little bit of wrong way on the road. You know.
Empty streets, so you're just taking some liberties.
You can see, because it's straight, you can see a mile. There's no cars coming.
Mm-hmm.
So I do it. Cop, lights, yelling, tires screech, calls for backup. No kidding.
I think he espied a bike corridor warrior.
I think he did.
He was worried.
Yeah, we had a situation. And
he was worried. His manhood was threatened because someone who rides a bike 2,000 miles in a year is a fucking man. And he felt threatened by that.
Yeah.
No. So, wow. What did he was yelling at you.
Well, he was like, I told you to stop. And I was like, I didn't hear. Notice I didn't tell that in the story because I really didn't hear it. I really didn't hear him yelling in a way. He said, you heard me. And
did you have your Sony Walkman on?
No, I didn't have my Sony Walkman on. I didn't even have any tunes on. I had my helmet on. That's what I had on.
Doing everything right.
Except for the wrong way, a little
except
down
for
the
wrong
road.
Yeah. So
the other cop's watching this whole thing, and he can tell he's pissed he's been called here. It's obvious. Yeah. He's in the middle of a show, and it got interrupted, and he wants to go back to the station to finish his show. It's obvious.
The backup guy?
The backup. Clearly, he's trying to get to a show.
Were there guns drawn? Were there tasers out?
There were hands free and then hands touching things from time to time, but there was no drawn guns, no.
Ready stance, kind of.
He was ready stance, yeah. Well said. Ready stance. So they... One time he said, no, you something something me. And there's no, I couldn't stop. I said in a strong, assured voice, I'm not lying. This is what happened.
Mm.
And both the cops backed down. Not like I'm some Superman or something, but it just, I feel that I was genuine, and they were like, I don't think he's lying.
You stood up yourself.
I stood up for myself.
Stood up for yourself in an honest, authentic way.
And they were like, oh, okay, maybe not. Maybe we're, you know.
Yeah.
Had maybe. I been a different ethnicity.
Interesting.
Who knows? I happen to be Caucasian.
Yeah, the statistics might know.
Yeah, they would. So, thanks for letting me tell that story. Bicycles, Aubrey, if you think about the topic of bicycles in your life, can you think of something that the bicycle has changed in your life, like a fundamental change since you've had one of your favorite things be bicycles?
Changes in my life or just in the
world?
In
your life.
Well, I'm in better shape. I'm able to plan travel times better. I have a better knowledge of the basics of simple machines that compose a bicycle. I spend less money on transportation. I tend to think of the bike as the first option, even over walking. I tend to think, oh yeah, there's a bike there. And the distance can sometimes be a problem, you know.
Hmm.
Or
how many miles before you're like, eh?
Or if you want to show up somewhere well-dressed, smelling nice and not sweaty.
Yeah, there's that.
But I've definitely ridden my bike to clients and been well-dressed and not sweaty, etc.
You just take it easy?
Yeah, take it easy. Or give yourself a cool-down period before you walk in the door.
How smart is that?
Or bring a change of clothes.
If you can just time a cool-down period...
Yeah.
That's just smart.
Why is anyone late? Why are we still late?
I don't know.
Just add some time.
Just leave before that.
Like, yeah. Arrive and wait. There's an idea. Arrive and wait.
Hmm.
Bring a book.
Oh.
Arrive. Oh, I got some time to kill. Read a book. Listen to a podcast.
So that's cool. That's a cool. I really like your answer there.
How about you? You grew up. You always liked bikes.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about maybe a brief history of the bikes you've owned.
Okay. Fun story.
And then we'll get on to your topic.
Okay, great. So yeah, original OG bike is probably like a tricycle thing I was gifted and they pushed me around on, and then I remember, I think I was probably about 4 when I got a bicycle that had training wheels on it that you could later remove, and I had those babies off pretty quick.
Did you have a big wheel?
I mean like the tri-wheeler thing?
Yeah, the plastic.
Maybe briefly, but it might have been my brother's, I don't know.
Cool, so you got the training wheels off pretty quick.
So I got the training wheels off pretty quick, and we had a big driveway, and I would ride around in our driveway, and I was just figure eight fucking all day. And my parents were like...
You mean infinity?
I would infinity.
Yeah.
I would infinity on a bicycle, just pedaling it, because I thought it was cool. I thought it was so much fun. And then they were like, eventually, like, we got to open the gate and let him out. And they're like, first they, you know, help me with the road. Of course, you know, normal parent stuff. But then eventually I was circling the block.
Hmm.
And that was like, they would go, okay, circle the block. And I would just to burn some energy, you know, on a bicycle.
Yeah.
My mom worked at Stanford University, and we lived in Redwood City several miles away. And what we used to do is, me and my friend Jason, we would take day trips. We'd ride out all the way out to Stanford University and then ride around the university. That'd like be our fun thing to do in a day.
Yeah. Beautiful campus.
Beautiful campus. And of course, the weather's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And you're just out here in the sunshine in the summer on a bicycle with your friend riding around Stanford University.
Sounds perfect.
So that was awesome and would totally do that again. And that and there's also like whenever it was winter time in the same kind of era being a kid on bikes, we'd there'd be mud pits and we'd go just fucking just mud ourselves completely up in the mud. On, I've had like kind of, you know, I think early kind of huffy mountain bike kind of stuff. I think probably about like you. And then it kind of get into a little better mountain bikey stuff, more adult sized, and I would just wear them out. And then I actually went a long span without owning a bicycle. When I became a flight attendant, it just didn't make any sense anymore. I had a road bike right before.
You didn't ride your bike up and down the aisle of the plane?
Oh, I thought about it.
Her unicycle.
Here's your beverages.
Here's your beverage, huh?
Is that my horn or the squeaky
That's
wheel?
That's the squeaky wheel.
So when I was a flight attendant, it didn't make sense. And then a couple years in, about 4 years into being a flight attendant, I got a road bike again. I got this. It was gifted a very, very poor shape, like 70s Peugeot road bike. You know, with the shifters way down in the bottom
frame
bar.
Frame was probably great, though, right?
No. The metal was tired.
Peugeot.
It was pretty tired.
Distressed metal.
The wheels were all super huge. They were like the heaviest, oldest things possible. It had been in a barn a very long time. I was very grateful. So I put $100 into it to get it going, right? And it was like pretty hard to ride after that. And then like I kind of rode it a little bit here and there. And then moving on to the boat, moving to Berkeley, finally I had that move that Peugeot out, and then I rode that a bunch more around. That's kind of like right when I moved to East Bay was really when I was like, I have this bike. I have 4 days off a week. I don't want to always be working on the boat. I'm going to ride around Berkeley, and I did. Eventually, I had a little bit of money saved, and then I got my tax return, and I was like, okay, I'm done, because I had been fixing the Peugeot every week. I was at Street Level Cycles, which we'll put a post in for the shift, because that is a lovely place where they, for cheap or free, kind of it's a little gray area, help you with your bikes, and they have tools and cheap parts, and it's a cool place. And that's in the Aquatic Park in Berkeley near University Avenue. And I was just there every week. It was always something else, and they're like helping me, like they're giving me like the oh yeah, you got one of those. Oh sorry, kind of whenever I was in there, because I was always fucking in there. And they're like, yeah, I guess, you know, that's just what it is, you know. And I'm like, okay. So eventually, I have the tax return, the other little bit of money, and I buy this Fuji cyclocross aluminum bike. And I rode it. I was like tearing it up with that thing. Fucking loved it. But the frame was really rigid because, you know, it was aluminum. And I was even larger than I am now. And it ended up breaking a lot of the components. Like it just broke all the time. It was there back at Performance Bicycle. And that's what's cool about that place is if you buy a bike there, it's seriously covered. And so I owned it for nearly a year and then returned it.
Was it like cheap components? Just not.
They were okay. They weren't really cheap. They were okay components. And
just not the bike.
The frame couldn't resist my weight. I'm like, push hard. I push really hard. And so I think I need to have a steel bike so it can flex and be strong.
Right. Your bike now is steel, right?
Yeah. Head to toe. No fiberglass or aluminum. It's all steel. Forks and all. So it's like.
Yeah. Cool.
I got the Fuji, and I just broke it all the time. And I had it for like 8 months, I think, or maybe a little longer. And I returned it, and they fucking took it. And I was like, I can't believe it. So I had all this trade-in value, and then I found...
What was the trade-in value?
It was like $1,000.
Oh, wow.
I paid $1,200 for it, and they said they took $200 off for a cleaning fee, and I was like, fine. Cool.
Just say yes.
Just say yes.
Good. Great.
So I got perfect most of my money back for almost a year of that bike.
That's insane, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what's cool about Performance. I will
say Performance Bicycle.
Performance Bicycle, they're not paying us yet. but they might want to.
It's a great shop. I was there just the other day. I wanted to just to say that bicycles, you know, what breaks down on a bike? You got tubes.
Flats. Yeah.
And tires.
Mm.
Brake pads. Grips.
Grips.
That's it.
That's basically it. That's the wear down parts, yeah.
Those are the things that wear down
stretches.
First.
Yeah, your chain stretches. Your derailleurs get out.
You've heard of the those airless tires. It's just like kind of a lattice work of rubber.
Wouldn't that be really heavy, though?
Well, this is just for cars right now.
Oh.
Apparently, it's noisy.
Hmm.
It's not really dense. It's like a very spaced out lattice. It's not super dense.
I can picture it.
Very weird looking. Why are we still using tires with air in them?
Yeah.
Why are we still late again? Why are we late? Why are there tires with
capitalism?
Air in them?
Capitalism!
And like tires too. It's got to be a way to make an indestructible bike.
I think once we have access to a workshop, we're going to start that direction.
Start that project.
Start the project. It'll take years to get there, but you know, I know where to start, I think.
There's a lot to talk about with bikes. Man. I think we might have bicycles part two.
We might have to have
somewhere down the line.
Because there's so much more to go, and yet we've been on this topic a bit.
And we're going to, we actually have a question about bikes at the end of the episode, so stay tuned. So that concludes our topic of bicycles. Okay, so what do you hear when you rake terse leaves?
I don't know.
Kurt Russell. Thanks. That was the joke of the episode.
Joke of the episode. That was good.
So, Drew, you had a topic.
So,
right?
Next topic.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. What's our next topic?
I feel like I'd like a topic sound, like a like you know.
Maybe.
That's a start. It's also a fart. I'll try to be still my heart.
Topics.
The Zeitgeist movement.
Two of those words are English.
One of those words is German. And
huh.
It generally, to my understanding, means spirit of the times, Zeitgeist.
Right.
And that's kind of the moral, cultural, ethical, government temperature of a given era, the Zeitgeist.
Mm. Okay. Zeit is time, right?
Mm-hmm.
In German.
And Geist is ghost.
Geist is ghost. The Zeitgeist movement. Tell me a little bit about this.
So the Zeitgeist movement is a grassroots global sustainability advocacy group. What that means is...
What does that mean?
Well, I think I identify myself as a member, although there are no technical members. I kind of feel that I'm part of the movement, and it seeks to advocate for a global resource-based economy.
Okay. So an economy based on the availability of resources?
Yeah. So instead of basing our economy on the price of goods and the cost of money and the debt ratios, we instead would enjoy to measure the Earth's resources in a transparent and open source way. So using satellites and ground data.
That's the first step.
But that's essentially one of the major roles of a resource-based economy.
Taking inventory of the resources that we have globally.
Yeah. Taking inventory of the resources that we have globally and essentially declaring all of it the common heritage of all people on this planet.
Mm.
So then we would then operate as, in a resource sense, as one living system,
mm-hmm.
where we would use the scientific method to dynamically track our emergent and symbiotic culture.
So almost homeostatic, maintaining a certain equilibrium of availability of resources.
Based on the carrying capacity population of the Earth.
Right. Yeah. Wow. That's a big concept. I can see a lot of areas from which there would be opposition.
Mm-hmm. Most commonly people,
bureaucracy, capitalism, etc.
Right. Right.
So, okay. What would be like a first step? What could an individual do? An individual of modest means, what could they do?
An individual of modest means could perhaps learn about a resource-based economy, or as it's also called, a natural law economy. Learn about the Zeitgeist movement and learn about something called the Venus Project. And somebody with modest means could explore those topics and make their own assertions about if they feel that that would be something they'd want to support and advocate for. If it's not, then that's the end. And if it is, then what you can do is you can go online to thezeitgeistmovement.com. You can find your closest chapter, because this is a global movement. There are chapters all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And there are events year-round. So you can find your local chapter. If there is no chapter near you, go ahead and look on what it takes to start a chapter and see if that works in a way for you.
Right. That's almost it's almost like Discord Records is ethos. You know Discord Records?
Mm-mm.
You know the band Fugazi?
I've heard of them.
Yeah, anyway, Discord Records kind of started to promote a very specific, you know, it was D.C., Washington, D.C. area bands.
Hmm.
And
punk?
Yeah, like punk, hardcore, you know, and indie, you know. Mm-hmm. And so their philosophy was like, well, we're not going to sign artists from distant lands. Just start your own label. That's how you'll, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like start your own Discord, start your own chapter of whatever. Start your own record label. So I find an analog there. Now, you mentioned the Venus Project. What is that?
So the Venus Project is run by Jacques Fresco and Roxanne Meadows in Venus, Florida. They have some land there where they have some test facilities and things. And Jacques Fresco is a futurist and an author and a speaker.
Hmm.
And he has a good hold on a working model to think about for the future. It was originally connected to the Zeitgeist movement. There was some problem with Roxanne Meadows and Peter Joseph and a tragic expression of unmet needs about where giving credit where credit is due. And unfortunately, they parted ways. But it's not actually that unfortunately, because they're both doing their own thing and it's fine, because they're all really working for the same thing.
Their objectives are similar.
Their objectives are similar, and it appears as if my assertion of the situation was that there was just people unwilling to listen, and that's too bad.
Yeah.
So the Venus Project is a living future-style world example of a resource-based economy.
Hmm.
So it's like what it could be.
What does that look like concretely?
Concretely, the Venus Project is a strong advocate of circular cities.
Circular cities. So a central distribution node that, or central distribution place that distributes the goods to the various nodes on the circumference.
Mm-hmm. Like the you circle. Could make it in belts and in pie shapes. It could be like transportation could just be seamless.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have waste removal, which there'd be very little waste. Seamless go through tubes under the ground within the city. Same thing with food delivery if needed. And there's like major areas for recreation. All the power is generated all locally.
Yeah.
And it's all working in a systems theory. It's all in about approach, about a dynamic understanding of the available resources and planned sustainability.
So the question comes up, I mean, if every city is designed in the same way, are you in a kind of prison? Like, can we, there's got, if it's synergetic emergence, we should be, and scientific method based, we should be constantly experimenting with new infrastructure, new ways to think about the infrastructure and how things are distributed.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And Jacques Fresco agrees. And at present, with our current understanding, there doesn't seem to be something else that seems cooler to think about in that way. And he agrees, for the Venus Project's sake, that, yeah, it is emergent. And so these cities would be, he said, his own words were, they would be prisons to the next generation.
Hmm.
Those are his words. I think we'll have to check.
Now, there are various Zeitgeist chapters you mentioned. And actually, I think with Alex Milankovic, episode 4, I believe, you guys met at the Zeitgeist.
Yeah, I was hosting an event, and he came out, and we met.
This is in San Francisco.
This was at the, Golden Gate Park.
Hmm. Which is in San Francisco.
Technically.
And San Francisco is in California, right?
I think so.
Okay. Just to clear it up for our international listeners.
Thanks, international listeners, for keeping, staying patient.
So, okay, so an individual can participate.
An individual can participate by any way they wish, number one. Number two, you can find a local chapter and go to a meeting and find like-minded people. Option three, you can create your own chapter and find like-minded people.
How does a resource-based economy, what's the seed, what's the kernel? How
start it?
How can one person start it? I mean,
well, I think
what would it look like? Let's rephrase this. What would it look like to have just even in a microcosm of a resource-based economy, like a self-sustaining house? You'd be off the grid, right? Is that true? Creating your own electricity, your own garden.
Mm-hmm, but you'd be connected to everyone else as well.
Okay.
So a resource, a startup seed kernel city wouldn't want to be cut off from the world,
mm-hmm,
because I don't think that works. So what I would advocate for is private land, mm-hmm, where you would begin with the resources you had, like whatever you could, if you manage with your friends to find a way to purchase land, and then figure out what are the resources available on that land, what's the knowledge that you have with you, what are your current abilities to, in this system, still generate income,
right?
So because one of the main things in a resource-based economy and the Zeitgeist movement is that we're advocating eventually to have a money-less society.
A la TNG.
A la.
So it's almost, you have to operate, this touches on the breaking of rules and constraints that I mentioned a couple episodes ago in terms of vis-a-vis artistic expression. But you have to almost operate within the system of capitalism briefly, in order to kickstart to instantiate a resource-based economy.
It seems as though you would must, yeah.
Yeah, you can't fully free yourself from the capitalist.
Unless you could go to some land that was somehow totally unincorporated.
Yeah. The poles.
The poles.
The poles.
Not many resources there.
Or the open ocean.
Open ocean, another idea.
Floating cities.
Yeah, back to that.
The Cluche Obelisk. I'll bring that up later.
Mm-hmm.
Not in this episode, but down the line. I'm still working on it. Be patient. Okay, so Zeitgeist movement. It's interesting. Has it made progress? I mean, I hear about it and people advocate it and so forth. Is there any concrete progress or anything?
You know, the Zeitgeist movement as a movement knows that it's eventually will be obsolete and is a mechanism at this point. So the movement creating...
almost a catalyst.
Yeah, it's a catalyst. The movement gaining energy for in and of itself is sort of not such a great goal. But advocacy really is the goal. Really advocacy for folks who hadn't considered this as an option. Just like it just doesn't seem natural that one would think, oh, well, we actually do have the technology now to eliminate really all of monotonous labor, and then we can live harmoniously with all of our needs being met sustainably. That's like a foreign thought, because you don't think about technology doing that in that way.
Yeah, I could. Yeah. I could see it being a technocracy, like ruled. The people who, quote unquote, hold power would be the technicians who are able to troubleshoot, fix, diagnose, repair, and build new pieces of infrastructure for the
city. That's why everybody would interchangeably be that person.
Okay. So wrapped up with the Zeitgeist movement concept is, correct me if I'm wrong, but is it also advocating for a hierarchy less arrangement?
That's correct. In the Zeitgeist movement, resource-based economy model, it advocates for a system of governance without a government, and for the, like I said, eventually the removal of all money, unless you want to. If you, like, you and your buddies want to, then fine, go do your thing, but it won't be, you won't be able to directly control the resource access of other people. Other people will, their own living life will be their direct access to resources.
It's almost like you'd have to draw up a, or one of the precepts of this society would be, there'd be additions to the human rights. Everyone has a right to resources. Wouldn't that be something?
I think that this is a human rights campaign. The Zeitgeist movement is a human rights campaign.
It sounds like it is, yeah.
Yeah, if we can effectively measure and meet the needs of every single person sustainably with increasing returns, ROIs, then we're succeeding. That's the new GDP. The new GDP is how many needs are getting met for everyone. And we celebrate accordingly. Yeah, we're in the Richmond Hangar, and it was like a big group of people, like 50 people. And there's some people who had done some advocacy before, but it was mostly new people. That's where I met Dan. And Dan and I make the music Battle Elk.
And Dan is a guitar player?
Dan plays the drums.
Oh, a drummist.
Mm-hmm. He's a drummist.
Drummist.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with cyclist.
Right, different.
Okay.
So we basically went from there, but it was the meetings and the structure of the chapter, it was so loose. Just organization kind of came in and out, and we just did what we could. And
I have a question.
Go ahead.
At the end of the meeting, was there any kind of, like, takeaway? Was there any, like, agenda or goal? Or was it just everyone getting together and patting themselves on the back? Was there a takeaway? Was there, like,
The very first meeting, there was, like, the takeaway was for more meetings.
Okay. Meetings totally blow, by the way.
Yeah, so when we were running stuff, we called them mixers. And mixers had way more fun, and they're most often on my yacht. And so when we did that, that was cool. So people would come hang out on a boat.
Naglfar.
It didn't go anywhere.
Naglfar. We mentioned it. We talked about it extensively in episode one,
way back.
Yeah.
So we had big mixers, and the boat was a 60-footer.
Mixer is a good non-hierarchical way to talk about it.
Yeah. Thus we did, and we had many meetings on the boat on Naglfar.
Did you have any, as much as I hate this combination of words, did you have any actionable items at the end of the meetings? Like, we had a meeting,
Something was coming up, basically, like when Z-Day was coming up or the media festival, those are the main two events that we worked on, was Z-Day and the media festival. Those are two global annual events for the Zeitgeist movement.
Okay, what Z-Day, what's that?
Z-Day,
or when
March.
Is that?
It's in March. Oh, the exact dates shift a little bit, but this year it's in Greece. Peter Joseph's going to Greece to do a big presentation there. So it's essentially it's just the same shit. It's you rent a place and you sell tickets and you talk about a resource-based economy. You talk about why we need to consider this system that we're in is probably going to kill itself at some point. You don't even have to kill it. Just watch it die. And then what the fuck do we do after that?
So you attend this meeting. You hear this inspiring rhetoric, so forth. And then what do you do? What can you do?
Well, you can. Depends on where you are. So if you were here, say you're in California. Say you went to a Z-Day meeting. You're in California. You went to a Z-Day meeting. And you're like, cool, I live near-ish here. I'm going to keep going to meetings. Basically, what you have to do is you have to build a strategy about what you want as a chapter. I think the chapter, we could just conversate about different cool goals, about what seems like cool goals to do, and then plan them out based on people's availability. Just kind of go from there. So say we had you and me and two other folks, and they were like, okay, I have this much time basically to commit to, I can't, you know, 5 days a week. Some people can't do that, you know, even though you're active and you want to be. Sometimes you maybe have 1 day a month, but like you can kind of just be upfront about what you're willing to do and not do. And then you say, okay, what are we going to build for Z-Day? We're going to make our own Z-Day. We're going to get our own space and we're going to set up presentations that we design ourselves based on advocating for a resource-based economy. Which I've done several times.
Wow. So it's almost like what the individual can do is reach out to another individual and make, I mean, that's how the resource-based economy starts, is with at least two people, right? If you have an agreement with another person to kind of obey the laws of a resource-based economy, that would be a start.
It would be.
Let's say I do something for you. You do something for me, and we come to jettison money as a way of doing things for each other.
Yeah, we would like do things
like
for
you and
each
I
other.
Come kind of already do that.
We do basically, especially on the bike trips. You know, like we're basically a resource based economy. It's like, what do we have? Everyone has access to it. There's no mine or yours. It's just what is. Do we need a bungee? Right. Here it is. Do you need here air pump? There it just.
There it is.
There it is.
And that's actually a more efficient model because we don't each have to carry our own pump, right? I just have my pump, or, you know,
we both
I say my
pump,
but...
You carry the pump.
I have the pump.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And, right, that's you're spot on with that.
Yeah. So we basically have that going on. So I essentially would like to experiment with expanding and extrapolating that.
Yeah. And I think where that reaches critical mass is not things like pumps, but essential human needs like food, shelter, water, love.
Physical well-being.
Yeah. So if we can take the bike order model and the zeitgeist model and apply it to interpersonal relationships and
cohabitation.
Yeah, cohabitation. That'd be something.
Yeah, I really hope to. Speaking of the zeitgeist movement, I really hope to one day somehow acquire enough capital or something to purchase land with people I love and do our best on that land. Like, do what's the best we could do based on the available resources we have, including monetary resources, including time resources, including physical resources.
Yeah.
It's all of the resources.
It's hard to get away from hierarchies, but I'm totally on board. What could a listener do? Let's say there's a listener out there who's interested in this. What would you tell them?
Well, I would say if you're interested in this, kind of like I was sharing earlier, check it out. Check it out for yourself. See if you dig it. Once you say you're interested and you do dig it, right?
Zeitgeistmovement.com. Yeah. Is that what it was?
And zeitgeistmovie.com. You just anything, you'll just find it. It's everywhere.
Google it.
Watch the movies. So say you're into it and you're like, what do you do? Well, here's a news update. I'm starting an East Bay chapter for the Zeitgeist Movement right now.
Cool. Based in Richmond?
It's going to be based essentially... The advocator is Alex Milankovic, actually, our host from before.
Mm-hmm.
he and I are going to start an East Bay chapter here, and it's going to be essentially located here and at his house for different things, but it'll be where in cooler places when we discover cooler places. So it's essentially amorphous, but we're beginning an official chapter. So say you're a listener and you're in the East Bay and you're like, well, what do I do? That's a thing you could do. We're going to be go on the main website and you find us.
Cool.
And then we'll make a calendar and we'll have agendas, be transparent, and it'll be great. You know, folks, I went to a doctor, and that doctor prescribed me something called cannabis.
Is it canned good?
No. Well, it could be. It can be.
Huh? Cannabis. Is it related to Anubis? Speaking of Egyptian mythology.
Okay,
cannabis. What's cannabis?
Cannabis is...
Oh, well, let me say... Sorry. For what problem did you get prescribed cannabis?
Well, problem... I get described cannabis. That's an...
I mean, what was your Bravo
my Sierra? Ailment? Yeah. Well, I mean, the shoulder. The what old was your shoulder ailment? from the airplane, right?
Yep. All fixed up.
Occasional, you know, hum, really rarely. Essentially, cannabis, in one way or another, was part of a thing that helped me cure myself of sleep apnea. And I think the anti-inflammatory properties in general are good.
Sleep apnea is like a nasal thing, mm-hmm. right?
It seems weird that cannabis would help that. That's like, well, it doesn't make any sense. But that's when I started smoking is when I eventually stopped using the machine, the CPAP machine, which I had used for a while.
What is that?
A CPAP machine is a forced air device. It's like your Darth Vader at night. You get into bed and you strap this big plastic thing onto your face and then you go to sleep.
you kiss your girlfriend or wife goodnight and then you don this
yeah.
Iron Maiden helmet.
Yes. And then you try to sleep. So I did that for years because I was choking myself awake.
Yeah.
You know, because...
That sounds horrible.
It was. And it was like the lack of sleep that lack was happening ended up harming most of my life.
Because you don't... That's weird. So you're almost like drowning?
Yeah.
When you're sleeping?
Yeah. Very little REM occurs. So it was really horrible. And I went I had sleep studies to figure out that's what's happening.
Was it scary to wake up when that was happening?
It didn't. You weren't conscious. When that happens, you stay below consciousness, but so you don't know you're waking up, but you wake up all the time.
And so your body doesn't ever go into REM. You don't get the
Full rest,
full sleep.
Mm-hmm. So that went on for years.
Shit.
So I put the machine on. So what the machine does is it forces your stuff open and keeps a positive airflow pushing on your
How does
stuff.
It keep it open? Is it a humidity thing?
No, it's a pump. And you wear a long tube. The mask is connected to a long tube. Just air.
Just
pushing
an air pump.
Air pump.
Into your nasal
pushing
cavity.
Pushing into your nasal and mouth cavities. Yeah, if you want. You can pick the kind of mask. And they're named weird white guy stuff. Like mine's like Liberty America or some shit like that.
That is very Darth Vader. Wow. Okay.
And so they're named weird.
So cannabis has some positive effects.
It has definite positive effects. Now, what they are, it's kind of still up for debate. It seems like... Science is still trying to figure out the difference between indica sativa, relaxing, stimulating, CBD, THC. It's still like we're still figuring it out. But there is clearly no one's died. And it's anti-inflammatory and it helps cell function. So whatever cell it connects to, it increases that cell's function. So it has, it's like,
sounds like a pretty awesome
mother's milk. I don't know.
Yeah. Sounds like a pretty awesome plant.
Good thing it's illegal.
Yeah. Right. That was sarcasm. It's not a good thing. It's illegal. It's bullshit.
It's pretty crazy that people are in prison for mm-hmm. a plant.
Yep. A plant that grows naturally, quote unquote, naturally.
A prison that's privately owned and publicly traded. That's a little rough.
Yeah.
You bet those traders smoke. You bet they do.
Slipping into a little bit of capitalism theory here.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I think it sticks in both of our craws, big time.
Yeah. The Zeitgeist movement believes that the capitalist system was helpful. I mean, like, there were benefits to our culture, but its usefulness ended, like, a long time ago.
True. I believe that culture is just what works. That's it.
Yeah.
You can't impugn culture. It's just, it's the manifestation of everybody doing the best they can with what they have. People are looking at their iPhones because they want to. Guess what? It's not a conspiracy. People would rather look at a computer screen than other people on a subway. Sorry. It's just, that's the way it is.
So sad, though.
Little bit sad. The show is not about sadness, although we touch on it. This show is about
part of empathy. Sadness.
Hugely. Hugely. One must be, you know, sad for the world, almost.
Yeah. Well, how about we wrap up the topic of the Zeitgeist movement and then move on to the next topic?
Any parting thoughts there?
Thank you. Parting thoughts. You know, I feel that it's something that really reaches to me, and as a burner who goes and lives in a circular city or a semi-circular city for a week a year, I guess I'll say religiously.
Burner means someone who attends Burning Man.
Yeah, so this is not a festival. It's an event in the Nevada desert that is moneyless, and is directly, look it up, a gift economy. The whole thing. There's no selling. There's no trading. There's no bartering. All there is gifting. So you live a week in a gift economy, and it changes your fucking life. You get a break from the, like, aren't you going to gimme? Well, didn't you? I'm going to gimme. You didn't. Aren't you? Like, you get a break from that.
The smoking gun of Burning Man is like, if it's such a great idea, why isn't it year-round? Why is it just one event? And maybe the singularity of it being one event actually plays into how well it works.
Well, there are global Burning Man events, and they are nearly year-round at this point.
Mm. I mean, like, a permanent community that is Burning Man.
I believe that's everyone's dream who goes there. Not everyone. I believe the majority. I make up the majority of people who go there wish they never had to leave.
Right. So, which prompts the question, why isn't it sustainable?
Well, number one, it's in a desert where there are no resources. All the resources are driven in on petroleum. So that doesn't work long term. So that the space doesn't work.
Mm.
If you built a Bucky Dome and maybe you could terraform the desert, but that's like, that's proper land, I think.
Terraforming, that's a topic I'll bring in eventually.
Thank you.
It's on my list.
But it's like that land belongs to the First Nation people. And I believe that their blessing and even co-planning would be mandatory. If not, then no.
Cool. Thank you for the summary. Zeitgeist movement. That was our second topic. Do we have another topic, or do you want to wrap it up? Your other topic was the Super Bowl, huh?
Yeah. So right now, tomorrow is the Super Bowl, right? So what they're doing is they're kind of pushing out a lot of the less fortunate folks, generally known as homeless, and they're pushing them all over the place, and they're giving them tickets, and then that makes it hard to get the, if you have a ticket, you can't get into the place with the shelter, and so the challenges are increased. There's lots of fees, and it's because the Super Bowl is tomorrow. And the Super Bowl, for our international listeners, is basically just a Bud Light commercial that is about 4.5 hours long.
It's a chance for every corporation who has enough money to flaunt that money and try to be artsy and have a commercial. The highlight of the Super Bowl is no longer the actual competition, it's the commercials.
It's like 3 million a second or some shit.
Yeah, and we, Man alive. We tried to convince Final Corp to, remember we pitched that idea for
which
the,
idea? Which one?
The Super Bowl idea. The Super Bowl commercial idea for Final Corp. Remember that one?
Yeah. I remember that. We had them about it, though.
It was a whole bit. I came out in a clown chicken costume. You came out in a clown costume. And we had all that banter and stuff. I mean, we can't really talk about it because we're still under contract from Final Corp. But, and they rejected that idea. But
they gave it a DNR.
It would have been cool if Final Corp could have made a commercial for the Super Bowl.
It would have been cool. And do you what do you think they would have focused on? The Multiers? The Mister? What do you think they would have done?
I think they might have something up their sleeve.
Oh, a new thing.
It might be something we don't know about. We're just a couple of proles here.
We're schlepping lower end Final Corp. Yeah.
Yeah, they spread a little money our way, but we don't know the inner machinations of Final Corp. I think they got something big up their sleeve. It's going to be big, whatever it is.
Well, maybe we'll just have to announce it. Maybe we'll leak it in.
Check. It's a little too vocally, not enough guitar.
Can you hear the drum in your headphones?
A little bit.
Cool.
Yeah. Play it again. It's there, sweet. Man. We're it's
in.
There.
We're good. I'm in.
This should be back.
I agree,
a little
more
bit.
Guitar.
This should be back a little bit. So it's a little more ambient.
A little more.
And put the.
Let me scoot back a little.
Put this. This needs to be forward, so it doesn't. Yeah.
Put your pop in. There you go. Look at us with the pop filters you got us, man. Thanks to Final Corp and these pop filters.
Architect, he barely laughs. All right, I think that's our show for tonight. Thanks for joining us. Thanks all for all our listeners. I'd really like to acknowledge everybody for taking the time to listen to this podcast.
Yes, thanks to you all very, very much. Much appreciation, much thanks, much gratitude.
We talked about bicycles, and we talked about the Zeitgeist movement. And our question this week is, how would you improve the bicycle? Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.